Movie battle is in. Let the fun begin. Hello, welcome to Movie Battle. Each episode, superfans battle it out to decide which movie is best. Here's your host, Kevin Armstrong. What is up, party people? Welcome to Movie Battle. I'm your host, Kevin Armstrong. This is episode 8, Can't Buy Me Love versus Love Don't Cost a Thing. This is a classic battle between the original and the remake. We got two special guests today, Adam and Brooke from the A-Side B-Side podcast. We're going to bring them out in just a moment, but first, some facts and tidbits. Can't Buy Me Love was directed by Steve Rash and written by Michael Swordlick. It stars Patrick Dempsey, Amanda Peterson, Dennis Dugan, Seth Green, Courtney Gaines, and of course, Court McCowan. Love Don't Cost a Thing was written and directed by Troy Baer and stars Nick Cannon, Christina Milian, Kenan Thompson, Cal Penn, Steve Harvey, and Vanessa Bell Calloway. Can't Buy Me Love was released August 14, 1987, and had a box office gross of $31.6 million. Love Don't Cost a Thing was released in 2003 and had a box office of $21 million. Both titles of these movies come from famous songs, Can't Buy Me Love by the Beatles, Love Don't Cost a Thing by Jennifer Lopez. The original title for Can't Buy Me Love was actually Boy Rents Girl. Rotten Tomatoes scores for Can't Buy Me Love, 48%, Love Don't Cost a Thing, 13%. Now, Love Don't Cost a Thing received 3 stars from Roger Ebert, who would say it's wiser and less cynical than the original and suggests that it might have some insight into the insecurities of high school. Roger was not as kind to Can't Buy Me Love, giving it 1.5 star out of 4, saying, "If Can't Buy Me Love had been intended as a satirical attack on American values, if cynicism had been its target, we might be onto something here. But no. On the basis of the evidence, the people who made this movie are so materialistic, they actually think this is a teenage comedy. Can't they see the screenplay's rotten core?" In Entertainment Weekly's 2006 ranking of the top 50 greatest high school movies, Can't Buy Me Love came in 41st. So there you have it. We're going to bring the super fans out after this break and get into the battle. Stick around. Welcome back to Movie Battle. Our first guest is Brooke Summers. Brooke is from Buffalo, New York. She attended the University of Buffalo and Austin Peay State University. She is a member of VET. She currently resides in Bowling Green, Kentucky. She is a parent of 2 adult children, and she works in radio. Brooke is also the co-host of the A-Side B-Side podcast. Brooke, welcome to Movie Battle.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here. Brooke, let me ask you this. What would your parents say you do for a living?
That's my dog. My mom would probably say that what I do, she'd say, is that a real job? Shockingly, she still can't believe that I get paid to talk all morning and play music. So
it's a good gig if you can get it.
I love it. I wouldn't trade it for the world.
All right. Brooke, who plays you in a movie about your life?
Can I say the younger version of me? I would absolutely love Zendaya. I mean, she just won an Emmy. She's perfect, right?
Absolutely.
So yes, let's say Zendaya, and she's gorgeous. So maybe people would be like, "Oh yeah, she's gorgeous too."
Hey, I think that's an excellent choice. Yeah, very, very talented. Yes, very good choice, Brooke.
Thank you,
Brooke. What is your go-to movie snack?
I have to say, I'm a nachos girl. I love nachos, and yes, I have to have the jalapenos. That's not even a real question to me. Like, when they're like, "Do you want the jalapenos?" It's like, Who doesn't get jalapenos and nachos? Come on.
Yeah, I would have to say I'm pro jalapenos and nachos. Yeah, we're a big nacho family here. We're actually having nachos Thursday.
Ooh, yum!
It's already on the menu. Like, it's, we prepped it last week. Like, yep, nachos Thursday.
Nice.
You are a Can't Buy Me Love super fan.
Yes.
What is it you love so much about the film?
You know, the funny thing is, A side, B side, I typically do true crime and Adam does nostalgia, but I think I'm in his wheelhouse because I think it's a really nostalgic movie for me. It's one that I have loved since it first came out. I loved Patrick Dempsey when he was this scrawny, nerdy, geeky kid. You know, and then everybody else, when he came along in Grey's Anatomy, they're like, Patrick Dempsey, ooh, he's so dreamy. And I'm like, oh, please. I'm an OG Patrick Dempsey fan. So I think it's a lot of just nostalgia for me. It's a good story. I just, you know, I've seen like the remakes and I'm like, I mean, it was good, but it's no Can't Buy Me Love.
That's strong. How old were you the first time you saw Can't Buy Me Love?
Oh gosh, I'd have to look it up and see what year that came out. I know I wasn't a teenager yet. I was younger, lusting after Patrick Dempsey.
it came out in 1987.
Okay, yeah, so I definitely was not a teen yet. So, ooh. Patrick Dempsey giving me the feels before the teenage years.
Wow. Yeah. You never forget your first.
That's true.
Did you learn anything from Can't Buy Me Love?
I would say the thing that I learned is be yourself, because when you put on this false front and you find out that people like that person, it's a really hard thing to maintain this false personality. So if they don't like you for who you are, then you don't really need them.
That's strong. I like that, Brooke. Very strong.
Thank you.
Was there anything you didn't understand about Can't Buy Me Love or anything you would change?
Well, you know, since it was an 80s movie, I'm sure there are some things now that if you tried to remake it wouldn't hold up. Just because 80s movies were a little more, I don't want to say sexual because movies now are, but I guess in the language that they used.
Right.
So I guess that would be the biggest thing, just to maybe keep it up with the times.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I was about to say the times, absolutely. Okay. Brooke, you get one quote. What is your favorite quote from Can't Buy Me Love?
Ooh, boy, that's a good one. I don't know, and I know it's probably silly, but I always loved when Cindy's mom was always calling him Donald, and his name is Ronald. And so I think that's one of the funniest parts to me, because I don't know why. I think it just goes to the whole character of him being this nerd and nobody really seeing him.
Right.
So I think that's, I don't know. I think that's one of them. And then at the end, when he's kind of realizing we're all the same, and he's like, nerds, jocks, my side, your side, it's all BS. It's just hard enough trying to be yourself. And it's so true, not just as like a teenager, but as an adult too, because, you know, when you're forced into work life and trying to be in social settings or like dating or whatever, you're trying to put on these different sides of yourself. And you know, even as adults, there's cliques, and it's like, just be yourself. If they don't like you, screw them. Sorry.
Oh, you're good. Well, that's very poignant. Brooke, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was great. All right. Well, hey, so I guess that was the B side of Movie Battle today. We're gonna go talk to Adam, get his take on everything, and then bring the two of you together. We'll talk some A side, B side, and then have the movie battle. Sound good?
Sounds great. I'll be here.
All right. Thank you, Brooke.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Movie Battle. Our next guest is Adam Weingarten. Adam is from Minnesota, where he lives with his dog, Lorelei, and children. Adam currently works as a public address announcer for high school sports and also a bartender and server. He is the co-host of the A-Side, B-Side podcast. Adam, welcome to Movie Battle.
Thank you for having me, Kevin.
We're very honored to have you. Thank you so much for doing this. Adam, how would your parents describe what you do for a living?
Mostly that I talk a lot, whether that is in front of a microphone or in front of people. And I've never stopped talking since the moment I came out of the womb.
Very nice. Very nice. Very nice. Okay. Who plays you in a movie about your life?
I've always said that when I was younger, it was going to be Topher Grace. And now that I've packed on a little bit of weight, I think it would have to be Fat Topher Grace.
Fat Topher Grace. That's good.
Like, honestly, like, he would have to let himself go for, like, an entire, like, maybe semester, and then he'd be okay.
It could be like what's the movie with Ryan Reynolds, Just Friends, when he puts on the fat suit?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, like he would have to go into some method acting where he only ate cheesesteaks and drank an incredible amount of beer. And then he could play me.
I mean, I could think of far worse things to have to do to get into character.
That's true. It's not like you got to, like, pretend to do meth for a month. It's just you got to have the best food in the world and also drink while you're doing it. So I don't know how that's a bad thing. The role of a lifetime.
That's very true. That's I would have to agree. Well, this transitions well. What is your go-to movie snack?
My go-to movie snack is popcorn. But I grew up, so I got into movies because my father loved movies. But I think my father loved movies almost as much as he loved popcorn. And my father would have this entire routine. Like, he was the guy who would, like, okay, fill up the bucket halfway. Then I'm going to go put some butter on it. Then I'll bring it back. You can put more popcorn in. Then I'll put butter on that. And also, I'm probably going to steal one of the salt shakers and take it into the theater. So I was very spoiled by movie popcorn as a kid because my dad had his own, like, accoutrement that made it work. And yeah. I have now found that I can't do that. Like, I don't understand the ratio of grease.
I was gonna say, it's definitely a science.
Yeah, there was a lot of chemistry going on there. So sadly, or I mean, I'll admit it, I'll own it. I really love microwave popcorn. Microwave popcorn, since I was in high school, has been one of the probably main tenets of the Adam food pyramid with cheesesteak. And it's always got to be Pop Secret Butter Lovers popcorn. So I have never not had a box of Butter Lovers popcorn in my cupboard in my life. Since I was like 15 years old, I've always had it. Like, I would have no money in the bank, but I would still have Pop Secret in the cupboard.
That's beautiful, man.
I know. I'm like, I'm just trying for a Pop Secret, like, sponsorship at this point.
Hey, microwave popcorn is and has always been an underrated snack. It doesn't get enough props as far as I'm concerned.
And the thing is, you can't trust the popcorn button. Like, that's how they get you.
No, yeah.
You can't just hit popcorn and then hope for the best, because you got to find the perfect, like, calculation for your preferred popcorn. Because it's always about, like, 30 seconds less than the microwave thinks. Like, I trust the microwave. It's my favorite sous chef in the world. But it always does popcorn wrong. It takes it a little bit too far. So if you hit the popcorn button, get ready. Because as soon as you hear less than one pop every 2 seconds, you got to pull that thing out.
I'm in full agreement. Yeah, you definitely have to pay attention while you're doing that.
Yeah, you don't want to walk away because you come back and now you got burnt popcorn. And I know there are people that like burnt popcorn, but that's not me.
Burnt popcorn? No, it's not my favorite. It's no.
I mean,
no,
some people like to see the world burn.
Okay. All right. Adam, you are a Love Don't Cost a Thing super fan.
I am. I love the movie. Go ahead.
Okay.
I loved it so much I was going to go over. Well, I love it because I love most 80s movies, but I did not love Love Can't Buy Me. Oh, I'm sorry. Money Can't Buy Me Love. Which was the... Was that Money Can't Buy Me Love? Am I remembering the title correctly? Love, yeah. Can't Buy Me Love. Yeah. I was adding extra words because it was implied that money was involved. But I'm not a big Patrick Dempsey guy, and it was just never my thing. Like, I love 80s movies. I have spent most of my life with a same haircut because of Back to the Future. I was like, at the age of 4, I was like, make me look like Marty McFly. And I was like, I'm good for the next 36 years. I've never changed my haircut. I love Pretty in Pink. I love Some Kind of Wonderful. But the one movie that just never clicked with me was Can't Buy Me Love. And then along comes this movie that kind of takes that same idea, improves it, makes it a little bit better. And honestly, the characters are way more accessible in a way. I mean, they're more believable, I would say.
Okay.
In a weird way for a teen movie, because no one in a teen movie is believable. But there is more genuine nature to those characters. And I think it just does a better job of telling the same story. So it was a movie I didn't really like when I was a kid. And then along came a better version.
That's very strong. How old were you the first time you saw Love Don't Cost a Thing?
So I actually talked with my dad today because my folks were in town. They live in another town, and they were in town today, and we were talking. We went out to lunch, and I mentioned Can't Buy Me Love to my dad. And he's like, oh, such a good movie. And I was like, it really wasn't, though. He was like, no, we used to watch it all the time. I was like, no, you used to watch it all the time. And I would be in the same room doing something else because I didn't love the movie at all. So it had to be... I don't know. So it came out in what, the mid 80s. I was born in 81, probably 6-7 years old when I first saw it. My dad thought it was great. My father is a movie buff. Our record is 6 movies in the theater in one day. Wow. And to my father's credit, we didn't pay full price for any of them because we went to 4 matinees and then 2 at the cheap theater. This is back when you could go to movies in the theater, kids. It was a thing that used to happen.
Those were the days.
6 movies in one day. He loves movies. He absolutely loves movies. And I've awesome. Pretty much every movie that I have ever seen is because of him. Meanwhile, my dog is currently attacking a toy. So can we pause for a second so I can get her to stop doing that? Because in the background, it's sure. just going to be squeaky, squeaky, squeaky. Hold on.
Sure,
1 second.
That's fine. Not a problem. 6 movies in one day. That is very impressive. I saw Wayne's World twice on the day it came out in the theater, and I thought that was really cool, but that's not as good as 6 in one day. That's pretty awesome.
My apologies, Kevin. That was going to ruin the sound quality. Yeah. Because it was just going to be like, people are like, what is happening behind him? Is a clown being attacked? Like, that is not good.
It's all good. All right, well, did you learn anything from Love Don't Cost a Thing?
I mean, I think I learned as much as you could learn from any teen movie, is that high school sucks, and then high school really never ends. Because I think one of my favorite things about, and I'm maybe jumping questions here, but one of my favorite things about Love Don't Cost a Thing is that the movie is as much about the main character, Nick, played by Nick Cannon, his story, as it is his dad's story. His dad has never truly left high school. And he is trying so, like, he is hanging on every word of his son being in high school and wants to be part of that. And for a lot of us, we really don't ever leave high school. I mean, there was a great philosopher that said high school never ends. I think it was Bowling for Soup. And that's true. High school really never ends. It just, we get bigger lockers. We get slightly better clothes, hopefully, but we're all still concerned about who's dating whom, who's hanging out, who's cool, who's not, who's the quarterback, who's, you know, got the freshest clothes. And so I think that was the one thing that kind of, like, I rewatched it last night just to be like completely fresh on it. And I'm using fresh because they say that a lot in the movie. So it is now back in my vernacular, which is super cool. I'm going to call people a grinder also, because I don't know what that means, but it evidently it's an insult, according to 2004 Love Don't Cost a Thing. But I think, was it like for the character of Steve Harvey? And I don't remember this when I watched this movie the first time. So, and I said I was, you asked me it was the first time, I said I was talking about Can't Buy Me Love. But the first time I saw Love Don't Cost a Thing, I was fresh out of college. And it was just sort of a fun, like, you know, playful movie. Nick Cannon had just come off Drumline. And so it was like one of those sort of like total popcorn movies. Like, I'm just going out to see a movie that I'm going to enjoy. I'm going to kind of, you know, it's not going to challenge me too much emotionally. And I did not remember the character of Steve Harvey in the way that I have now seen him as I'm nearly 40. And I see him as a father. And I see this guy who was just so desperate to still be a teenager. And I know a lot of people like that. So I think the one thing that it taught me is that for a lot of us, high school never ends. And some people never leave high school.
That's well said, Adam.
Thank you.
Is there anything you would change? Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything you would change about Love Don't Cost a Thing?
So the most egregious thing that stands out to me is how, and I think you can't get away from this with a teen movie, is that everyone is such an archetype of a character. Like the bad, like the cool guys are just so grumpy and bad. And the cool girls are all just so perfect and hot. And the nerdy guys are just so nerdy. And the parents are just so awkward and also super absent. And the entire movie, as I rewatched it last night, and this is not something I noticed when I was, you know, 20 and it came out the first time, or 21 or whenever it came out. But as a nearly 40-year-old who has kids in high school, there are no teachers in this movie except for like two scenes. Like, that is not reality. Like, where are the teachers? There's nobody in this movie that is a teacher for like more than like a second. So that's going to give some kids some really awkward experiences, because I think they could just like do whatever they want in high school and there's no teachers. So I would add some sort of teacher moments, because I think that needs to give kids a little bit more of an idea of what's coming. And I think it also would have given the characters more to play off of, because they're kind of left on their own. Like, it's like Lord of the Flies in Malibu, because there are no teachers around.
No teachers. I don't think I noticed that. I think you just shattered the glass for me.
I mean, there's a couple, but they really don't do anything. Yeah. Like, in every other teen movie, there's some like really grumpy principal who's like at some point like factors in. They do not factor in here. They spend at least 4 minutes on a cheerleader dance scene, which was totally inspired probably by Bring It On, because they're like, we got cheerleaders, we got to have a epic dance battle. But they have no teachers involved. And if you're looking at teen movies, one of the best characters from Breakfast Club is the principal that everybody hates. Adding a character like that could have made the geek and popular kids coming together more believable if they had a common enemy that was, you know, a principal or a teacher or somebody trying to lay down the law. Because knowing teenagers, one is the one thing that's going to pull them together. It's grown-ups telling you what to do.
That's
the one thing I would change. Sorry. That was very long-winded. Okay. I talk a lot, as mentioned earlier.
That was great. I'm in full agreement with you. I definitely couldn't have said it better than you did. All right. Well, Adam, you get one quote. What is your favorite quote from Love Don't Cost a Thing?
Oh. So the one quote that goes through both movies is when the cheerleader character says to the big dumb jock who's like harassing the nerdy guys, you should go sit over there because that's the end table. And that should probably be my favorite quote because it's the one thing that ties them together. But at one point, and the actors in this movie that are not the leads, there are some really good actors that are given tiny roles in this movie. And you can, and on rewatching it, you're like, oh, hey, that's Cal Penn. Or, oh, yes, that's Kenan Thompson. And at one point, Cal Penn, who goes on to work for the Obama administration and has a very interesting career. He's both famous for movies about White Castle and weed and also working on education for the government. He looks at the main character and he says something to the effect of, you don't get to be cynical and depressed. That's my role. And I was like, man, I was totally that kid. That's the kid that I was. I was like, I get to be the cynical and depressed kid. So that's the one that always stood out to me because I was like, oh, I like this guy. He's like me.
Well, that was great, Adam. Man, you sure do have a lot of thoughts on the movie. And
I have a lot of thoughts, period. I know it's overwhelming sometimes.
All right. Well, I definitely appreciate you being on here, and we're going to bring Brooke back on and do the movie battle.
Okay.
Coming right up after this next break.
I look forward to it. I'm going to lose.
All right. All right. We'll talk to you soon, Adam. Thank you. All right, party people. Before we get to the moment you've been waiting for, this is a very special edition of Movie Battle, as we have the co-hosts from the A-Side B-Side podcast, Brooke and Adam here. I thought we'd let them talk about the podcast before we get started. Brooke, Adam?
Hey! I'm really excited to be here. Just want you to know, because movies are my jam, besides true crime. So, yeah! okay, so where do we begin? A-Side, B-Side. Adam and I, real quick history, we were morning show co-hosts many, many moons ago, and I told him that I wanted to do a podcast, and Adam was like, well, whatever you do, count me in, and we came up with this idea of kind of mashing up our two worlds, and you've got A-Side, B-Side podcast.
And so A-Side, B-Side, A-Side is mostly about nostalgia and movie and media, so this should be right down my alley. But also, I have known Brooke for, what, 13 years now? Mm-hmm. So I am terrified to battle her in anything. So this could end very badly for me. I already have a box of tissues nearby, and my dog has been prepped that it's going to be a big cuddle night. So,
wow. That's a first. That's movie battle history. Just
okay. I mean, you got a pregame, and pregame is what it means to you. So for me, it's tissues and dog cuddles.
All right. Well, everybody, if you haven't, definitely check out the A-Side, B-Side podcast on all your favorite platforms. Subscribe, review, all that good stuff. Tell a friend to tell a friend. You know the drill. All right. The moment we've been waiting for.
Yes.
Represent.
I just cracked my knuckles. You can't hear it, but I cracked my knuckles.
Oh, goodness. Y'all are off the hook tonight. All right. Representing Can't Buy Me Love, Brooke Summers. Talk to me, Brooke.
Boom, 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 boom. Yes, I'm here. That was my, you know, party horn. I don't know.
That was impressive. I was very impressed. starting off with the 10. Are we allowed to trash talk? Because I'm going to trash.
Oh, absolutely. It's encouraged. It's strongly encouraged.
Excellent. You're a very smart woman, and I'm scared of you.
Yeah, you don't want this smoke. All right. Sorry. Let's be on our best behavior here, okay? All right. Sorry, Kevin.
You're good.
So, Can't Buy Me Love. What do you want me to say? Just how much I love it?
Or... Yes. What? You're representing it. I mean,
why is it better than Love Don't Cost a Thing? Because I don't think it is.
First of all, the originals are always better. I mean...
Oh, this is like the book is better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Love Don't Cost a Thing is a cheap knockoff of Can't Buy Me Love. I mean, yeah.
It's twice the budget. Million.
Okay, but compare it to 80s. Look what they did in the 80s with their budget to the this. I'm not going to say trash because I do like Love Don't Cost a Thing, but it's nowhere near the level of Can't Buy Me Love on less than a, on less of a budget. They killed it in the 80s. This is the ultimate like 80s rom-com, get you all in your feels, make you think about life and reflect back to your teenage years. It does it all. I was reflecting to my teenage years and I wasn't even a teenager when it came out. That's how good it was.
So what is the moment that made you feel the most teeny about that movie?
So there's not actually teen, two.
Like teenager.
Okay. Teenager. Okay. So at the Christmas party, when Ronald is, this discovery of Ronald being the fraud happens. Mm-hmm. And if you have not seen Can't Buy Me Love, I'm sorry, but that's a spoiler like from 30 years ago. But so there's this moment where Ronald is discovered as the fraud. And then he's outside of his own house looking at the festivities, just life is going on without him. And then the second one is when, you know, he's back in school, nobody's talking to him. He's trying to reconnect with his old friends and it's not working. And then he sees one of his old friends kind of getting friendly with another cheerleader, but this time it's a legit deal. And like the bullies are giving him a hard time. And he's like, you know, we used to be best friends when we were in kindergarten. Like what happened? We're still the same people. That, I think those are like the two moments that really made me think about, like that really got me connected to the teenage years, I guess.
I mean, that is fair, because I think one of the strongest moments of Love Don't Cost a Thing is that they mirror the moment, and it's Kenneth, who's played by Cal Penn, is talking to one of the cheerleaders about math. Mm-hmm. But it's a very genuine moment. Like, he's just wants to help her with math. And the bullies come over, and it becomes the same thing. And it was one of the probably strongest moments of both movies. Mm-hmm. But I would say, for me, with Love Don't Cost a Thing, one of the things that kind of made it different for me is, one, the struggle I always had with Can't Buy Me Love is that Patrick Dempsey, for me, was very believable.
Mm-hmm.
He was not very believable as a cool guy. One of the stronger things about Love Don't Cost a Thing is Nick Cannon, even when he is trying to be a nerd, is not good at it. You can tell that this guy is just inherently cool. And it's going to be, it's like that. And so I talk all the time, right? So I was at dinner tonight talking with my server at my favorite seafood restaurant. And I was like, hey, do you remember the movie Can't Buy Me Love and or Love Don't Cost a Thing? And the thing that they remembered the most was that Nick Cannon is just kind of cool all the time. So you're expecting it. He said it was just like when Rachel Lee Cook was in She's All That. Mm-hmm. And you're just waiting the entire movie for her to take off the glasses because she's an absolute smoke show. And so is Nick Cannon. Like Nick Cannon, they could dress him up with like bad hair and but he is not believable as a nerd. So when he transforms, that transformation just feels so much more natural. And when he's talking about, so my favorite movie, or my favorite moment in the movie, is when, so this is the movie Love Don't Cost a Thing. This is the thing that made me feel the most real about high school, the high school element of it. You had the character, Alvin, is at the party. I think it's the second party he goes to, with Christina Milian's character, whose name I always forget because I'm horrible at names. Oh my goodness. I'm never going to remember. But they're at the party and he has just had this entirely awkward, horrible conversation with his father, played by Steve Harvey, about sex, about condoms, mm-hmm. and how to open a condom. It is like, I think we've all been in that like conversation at some point with our parents. We've had the birds and the bees conversation. We've had the, you know, that thing. Mm-hmm. Mine happened at a pizza restaurant way after it probably should have. My father took me to a pizza restaurant when we were going to buy a computer. So that's how cool I was. We were going to go build a computer. We had to get a new motherboard for our Pentium processor.
You could have starred in Can't Buy Me Love is what you're saying.
I could have built the computer for it, but I don't think I could have starred in it.
I'm saying you could have been the nerdy character.
I was absolutely the nerdy character, but I didn't know. Like, I thought it was cool. Like, at least the nerdy characters in this movie knew they were nerdy. I was like, no, man. Pentium, that's cool. It's about the Pentiums, baby. That was a Weird Al reference.
Very nice.
So when he's talking to, so he talks to his dad, then he goes to this party and he rips open the condom with his teeth and pulls out the condom to fix the guy's car. That was the moment where he took everything that he was comfortable with, which was fixing cars, and that was his wheelhouse. But then he was also rising to the moment, like saying, like, I just learned this new thing and I'm going to take the two things, I'm going to marry them together and make this my moment.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most absurd, like, premise, like, okay, a guy opens a condom to fix a battery because it has a short, needs a rubber filament to make sure the short doesn't happen. That's a very strange thing to read in a script. But in the moment, to see somebody rise to the occasion, that felt like the moment that Alvin realized that he could do anything. And I remember moments like that when I was a kid where I was like, okay, this is the moment I can do something and I want to own it and I want to be excited about it. And I never remember a moment like that as much in the first movie.
No, see, I am going to disagree with you. I'm not going to say there was a moment like that, but you're saying that Patrick Dempsey wasn't believable as the cool kid. That's the whole point. He never was the cool kid. He was trying. He was pretending. It was all an act. So no, it's not going to be super believable because even he doesn't, well, I mean, he does start feeling himself after he breaks up with Cindy, but in the very beginning of it, he doesn't buy that he's the cool kid. That's the hope. Like, that's the point. Like, he wants to be cool so bad, but he's not. And then he realizes, I don't have to be cool. I don't have to be a jock. I don't have to be this. I don't have to be that. I am me. We are all still the same people. And we've got these dumb cliques for what reason?
Right. Can we talk about the dance scene, though?
The dance?
Epic, legendary. Choreographer, Paula Abdul.
Yes.
That was a lot. It was a lot to take in.
Wait, the dance scene in Can't Buy Me Love or Love Don't Cost a Thing?
No. Can't Buy Me Love.
Okay.
With Patrick Dempsey, where he thought he learned the newest dance, but it was not the newest dance.
Right.
But everybody joins in. Didn't that feel just a little over the top?
No, I loved every second of it. But that also goes to the whole, he's not cool. It's like it's an act. He wants to be cool so bad. That goes further into the whole, he's really not cool, no matter what he does. But because he's got this cheerleader, just like in Mean Girls, whatever the Mean Girl, you know, they cut the holes in her shirt and then everybody has holes in their shirt because she's the popular girl. She's the one that everybody wants to be like. So if Cindy says he's cool, even though he's really not.
It's in Billy Madison when the one kid pees his pants and then Billy Madison pretends to pee his pants and says, right, you're not cool unless you pee your pants. And everyone's like, yeah, we're it. It's the Emperor's New Clothes,
right?
Which is incredibly poignant to most of society at this point. But if somebody says something's cool, then we're all going to go along with it. Brooke, I rewatched the movie last night.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I completely forgot about is how the labels that people wore, and this is true today, ever, like, but the fact that, like, Kenan Thompson's character would buy a patch that says Sean John on it and then sew it onto his Wranglers so he could seem cool. I forgot that was a thing, but it was absolutely a thing. Like, labels, and maybe this is just how old I have gotten. Because I'm just like, hey, look, these pants fit. I am super excited. That doesn't always happen. But back then it was like, oh, these pants are a specific brand. And like, you're not, like, you could wear jeans that fit you better, but if they're not the right brand, then they're not cool. And that was something that kind of blew me away again at how prevalent that was in the movie of Love Don't Cost a Thing. And I'm sure that they may not have focused on certain brands, in Can't Buy Me Love. I don't remember like Calvin Klein being a thing, but there was definitely a fashion aspect to it. And I forgot that about high school. Like, high school is weirdly
fashionable. How could you forget that about high school? That's like one of the main things in high school. Like, if you don't dress like everyone else or have the right clothes, you can't fit in.
Well, Brooke, it's been a long time.
Well, true. But it's been longer for me.
We're roughly the same age.
I just have a better memory. Is that what you're saying?
You do. You do. Okay. You have a much better memory. We prove that every single week. But that just blew me away. I was like, I forgot. Like, here is this epic part of being a teenager is fashion. And maybe it wasn't as important to me because I had no idea what I was doing. But then I thought about it a little bit. It was like, I remember still wearing like the button-up shirt with like the sleeves rolled up and the white hat from Lids that had like the name of the team on it, but it wasn't really the name of the team. It was like Ruse if it was Kangaroos, or it was something else if it was Gamecocks, or if it was like, you know, like it was that white hat that everybody in the late 90s had because you had to wear that hat. And I was like, oh my God, I forgot completely about that. I should totally get that out of storage and wear it again.
Please don't.
Oh, okay. I'm totally not wearing that right now.
Please take it off.
I've been waiting my whole life to hear that, Brooke.
This is going great, guys. This is going as well right. as I thought it would. So please, you know, keep dropping
when somebody says this is going as well as I thought it would, not usually a compliment.
Well, no. Let me also. For the future, you know, as a historical reference, there is a presidential debate going on at the same time as we're recording this. But this seems,
yeah,
at least as
this is actually going to be more poignant than anything said tonight, likely. In my personal opinion, and this is not a politics podcast, but I think we will actually determine which is a better movie. I don't know that we'll determine anything from the debate tonight. So. let's take a step back. So we both talked about things that we love about our movies, but I'm gonna go to one of the preeminent movie critics of all time who has an opinion on both movies. When Love Don't Cost a Thing came out in the early 2000s, Roger Ebert rated it 3 stars. He said it is more grounded and more poignant than its predecessor, a movie that one of the greatest movie critics of all time called absolute trash and gave it only 1/2 star when it came out in the mid-80s. So
everybody screws up sometimes. Nobody's perfect.
I have Roger Ebert on my side.
I mean, let's just be real. Siskel and Ebert did screw up a time or two. So
I mean, everybody's got their flaws. I don't think this is one of his.
1/2 star, that's just wrong.
That's like Mean Girls level. Like, he was like, we wear pink on Thursdays or Tuesdays or whatever the day it is, and we don't like Can't Buy Me Love.
That's like going out of your way. If you get a 0 stars, you know, you didn't like it and you're having a bad day, but 1/2, that's like, you're trying to make a point. Like, that's...
Yeah. That is the... So I've worked in the service industry for most of my life. I was going to work at Subway and my mom said that, oh, you're going to stay out too late. And then I figured out I could work at 18 as a bartender. So I started working at a bartender. So talk about your all-time backfires, because I stayed out way later. And I was working as a senior in high school as a bartender. And one of the first things I learned was that if somebody gives you a tip that they have to write down, that they actually spent time writing it down, that is a bad tip, that should hurt worse than no tip at all. So if somebody like has a $20 bill and they give you a 10-cent tip, that is a verbal assault. So this, the fact that he's at 1/2 star, that is about the worst tip you can get.
Okay, but he also said, okay, look, I'm looking at it right now. He said, Can't Buy Me Love makes American teenagers look stupid and materialistic, like materialistic twits. They are.
I mean, yeah, he's not. He's pretty spot on with his example of.
He's fighting his own half a star with facts. American, especially nowadays. Like, my youngest daughter and I talk about teenagers all the time, and she's in college, and she's like, I can't believe I was this dumb in high school, because American teenagers are dumb and they are materialistic. So he just backpedaled on his whole point, because they are.
I think it's also a case of the environment when the movies came out. There were not a lot of teen movies coming out that I remember that were especially good when Love Don't Cost a Thing came out. And you had two rising stars in Christina Milian and Nick Cannon in this movie. Whereas in the mid-80s, I mean, you had a teen movie every weekend at Simple. And there were some, like, amazing teen movies in that time. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Some Kind of Wonderful, Pretty in Pink, The Breakfast Club. Like, all these movies are coming out, so it may simply be that you have recency bias. When you see all of those movies and then Can't Buy Me Love comes out and is just okay, you're like, wow, this is not a genre-changing movie. I will give it a half star. And then in the early 2000s, when nothing is coming out and Glee is like the way that we understand high school, you're like, wow, you know, Love Don't Cost a Thing is pretty good. So I will concede that there may have been some recency bias in his evaluation.
Plus, it seems that movies that audiences love, critics typically hate. Like, if you look on IMDb or Letterboxd, Can't Buy Me Love is rated higher than Love Don't Cost a Thing. So audiences loved it compared to maybe critics.
Yeah.
And like, who are you really trying to impress? Who's paying to see the movie? The audience.
Yeah, critics don't have to pay. They get to go for free, which is why I always wanted to be a movie critic, because that sounds like a great, like, that would save me so much money. I wouldn't have to pay for movies.
Mm-hmm.
I will.
So I'm going with the audience.
I will say that I talked to both my father and my bartender, which two of those are the two most important people in my life. Two of the most important people, not the most. My dog's in there too, and the other family members. But my family and my bartender are two of my favorite people in the world. And both of them were like, man, Can't Buy Me Love. Love that movie. In fact, the bartender tonight was like, we need to do an investigation on why the lead actress from Can't Buy Me Love didn't go on to do more. Because she made me believe that I, as a nerd, could succeed. And then I never saw her again. I was like, well, you know, evidently she was too good at her role.
What? She didn't do much after that, did she?
That's the weird thing about
it. She did. Oh, she died in 2015.
Yeah, but that was like 20 years. Like, she had some time to do some movies.
She did 12 films in that time.
I mean, let's be honest. Nick Cage does 12 films a year.
Nick Cannon?
No, Nick Cage. Nick Cannon doesn't do 12 films a year. He's on TV now.
Oh.
But Nick Cage literally does 12 films a year. That guy just, like, works all the time. So if there's roles out there if you want. There is an interesting theorem that brought up by my bartender, that why is it that most of the female leads from 80s movies didn't have the same careers that the male leads did? Like, you look at like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. What did Ione Sykes go and do other than Legend after that?
Well, I mean, you can kind of say, except for a few really exceptional females, it's kind of still true.
Yeah.
I mean, because one, the pay disparity, it's just outrageous. Like, perfect example of that, Sienna Miller came out today in a recent, like today or yesterday, in an interview, and she was talking about doing the movie 21 Bridges with Chadwick Boseman. And she said he donated his salary to her, part of his salary to her, to bump up her pay. So you can only imagine this is 20, that was 2019. You know, she's talking about this in 2019, 2020. So imagine in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, and
these women weren't getting paid crap.
One, that's a great movie. If you haven't seen 21 Bridges, I know we're talking about two teen movies, so we're taking a bit of a left turn here. But 21 Bridges is a very good movie. And she would.
Kevin, Adam does that all the time.
I do that.
I actually saw that within the last, two to three weeks. I watched that. That is good. Yeah.
It is, yeah. And so he was also producer on that movie. And I think I read the same article you did, Brooke, where Sienna Miller said, like, I've been with my kids for a while. I'm going to have to leave them to do this movie. This is what I'm going to have to get paid to do the movie. And the studio is like, nah, we're good. And Chadwick Boseman was like, I will take a pay cut so we can give her this money because I'm also a producer on this film. And I can do that because I think she'll be great for the role. And in that article, and I feel like we read the same one or something similar. She's like, I don't know anybody else in Hollywood that would have done that.
Yeah, she said it's unfathomable. She said men in Hollywood just don't do that. And he did it with, nobody knew that. If she had never said it, no one would have known he ever did that.
Yeah. So this just took a hard left turn into a Chadwick Boseman love fest, but he's amazing.
Absolutely.
42. Like, let's just, if you have the opportunity to watch any of those movies, watch them. And then go watch A Can't Buy Me Love and Love Don't Cost a Thing. And you'll understand that Nick Cannon is vastly superior to Patrick Dempsey as well.
All right.
Liar.
Let me ask you guys. Okay, so we got Can't Buy Me Love, Love Don't Cost a Thing. Is it time to bring it back? Do we need a third installment? And if you do it, are we just making a remake of the remake, or do we want to bring back Patrick Dempsey as like a parent, or I guess even Nick Cannon could be? He's hilarious.
Ooh. Yeah, no.
I like Patrick Dempsey as a parent,
but also Nick Cannon. Like they should be involved.
Yes.
Like maybe one of them's a parent, one of them's a teacher. But the thing is, you have this whole new dichotomy that you can use, which is the internet. So you could have this nerdy kid who finds an Instagram influencer.
Yep.
And he doesn't want to be cool in his high school. He wants to be cool online.
No, see, I think you need to do a female this time around. Especially if you have, if you've got Patrick Dempsey and Nick Cannon as like a parent and a teacher, you need a daughter that finds a male influencer and does it like that.
Yeah. No, but that, and then they don't even meet at first. And like, it's like a cameo thing where, like, you know, we all know Cameo. Is it Cameo where you pay the famous people to give you like a voice message?
Yeah.
That's Cameo, right? Yeah. Which is a very confusing thing because they're using Cameo in two different ways. And that, we should come up with a new word for that. But you could, like, it's a Cameo thing at first and then they become friends. And now it's like, oh, are you a catfish? I don't know. And they're like, oh, we could involve catfish in there. Maybe Nick Cannon's part of the catfish company that comes in and was like, are you being conned? We don't know. We're going to find out. I'm already writing the script.
Wow. You're taking it like a whole, like, whoa, way out in left field. Bring it back in.
Yeah.
Left field.
Buy Me Love, The Force Awakens thing going.
Cross with catfish, and at some point there's going to be a murder mystery involved.
See, this is turning into a whole A side B side. We're getting to now it's coming to crime.
Yeah, I think honestly it should be a series, not a movie. So I mean, we're going to have several seasons.
Yeah, that could work.
Netflix can kind of see it as the spiritual successor to All the Boys I'd Loved Before. So.
Oh, there you go.
Great. Hey, this has been again. Like I said, we were going to make podcast history tonight, and I think that's what we've done.
You're too nice.
Like, hopefully, we didn't make podcast history.
I see how you did that. Place a comma here. Place a comma there.
That's right.
All right. So
stop clubbing, baby otters.
This, you know. Y'all were predicting a landslide, but this one is too close for me to call. We might have to let the internet decide this one. Let's go to our final shots. Before we end this.
Final shots.
Yeah. Each of you just make your last greatest case for your movie. And we'll wrap it up. Maybe talk some more A side, B side. Brooke, you want to start us off?
Let Adam go first.
All right. Oh,
see, she knows, under pressure.
She knows I hate going first.
I'm sure he has something to say.
Yeah.
I know, shocking, right? All right, so here is why Can't Buy Me Love is not as good as Love Don't Cost a Thing. It is simply because evolution happens. When you have the original, there is going to be something that grows and becomes better from it. Love Don't Cost a Thing could not be as good as it is without Can't Buy Me Love. But because Can't Buy Me Love's mistakes and its missteps, Love Don't Cost a Thing can improve on them. It's just like when you have a child who is better than you in so many things, but you see so many great things of you in them. But the truth is, you probably love that kid more than yourself. And that's why you should love Love Don't Cost a Thing more than Can't Buy Me Love. And also, it's a better song by Janet Jackson.
Than the Beatles?
I think it's J-Lo.
I'm sorry.
And it is J-Lo.
I'm bad at names.
Which automatically negates your entire point, because J-Lo, compared to the Beatles, there is no comparison.
All right, internet, please look up both J-Lo and the Beatles and see who would like to watch perform. I mean, those guys are pretty amazing with the swaying.
Who sold more records?
Well, yeah, but they got a 40-year head start.
It doesn't matter. J-Lo's records are trash.
Talk to me in 2060.
Okay, and they're still going to be beating her by far.
It's all streams now, so we don't buy records. That's an old.
Uh-huh.
All right, Brooke, your turn.
Anyway, so like you said earlier, okay, I'm going to twist your point, because you said Nick Cannon, he's just always got this swagger and he's always cool, which, no, actually, Nick Cannon is kind of dorky. I love the dude, but he is kind of dorky. But in this instance, you're right. He's just not believable as a nerd. So there goes your whole premise to your movie right there, because he's supposed to be the nerd, the dork, the dweeb that has this magical transformation because he dates Paris, the popular girl, or dates in quotes. And he's not really believable as a nerd. He's not really believable as the nerd like Patrick Dempsey is. When you see scrawny, skinny glasses Patrick Dempsey, you think nerd. You don't think that with Nick Cannon. So right there, I think the whole premise of your movie is it completely falls flat, because it just misses the mark. I do like Love Don't Cost a Thing. It's just never going to compare to Can't Buy Me Love to me.
And to be fair, what's his name? Patrick Dempsey had his come up later when he gets to be called McDreamy for like 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he certainly grew into the cool kid role.
As they say, he had a serious glow up.
Very nice.
I'm still waiting. One of these days.
What, for a glow up?
Yeah. Any day now. I'm going to be hot in nursing home. People are going to love that stuff. Look at that guy with two hips.
Brooke, Adam, like I said, this has been just a great experience. And this has exceeded. I had high expectations, and this has definitely exceeded. This is just great.
You're too nice, Kevin, because I know you're like, oh my god, what are these? Tell them to shut up.
No.
Yeah, and also, and Kevin's like, how do I edit this? Like, what? They never stop. There's no break. He just talks the entire time. It's like the Micro Machine Man, but without the mustache. I have a beard. It's much bigger than a mustache. Also going to be a hit in the nursing home.
Nice.
As you've noticed, Adam does not like silence, and he will feel it every time. Right.
Okay, but we were in radio. We're not supposed to have any silence.
Yeah.
All right. Also, like, I would be horrible at staking anybody out or hiding in the bushes. I'd be like, can they see us? What's going on? Should we jump out? I think we should jump out. No, we shouldn't jump out? Okay, I'm going to stop. No, I'm not going to stop.
Well, again, it's working. Y'all have a great day. And like I said, I'm a huge fan of the A-Side, B-Side podcast. What have y'all got coming up? anything y'all can share? The next episode, anything cool coming up?
I can tell you on the B side, talk about a killer mama.
Ooh.
That's what I can share. Yeah.
And I would say that mine is about dinosaurs. Because I'm really just trying to pull in like the under 5-year-old podcast listeners. We're just going to talk about dinosaurs.
Hey, I've got a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old in this house that would love a dinosaur podcast.
I mean, these are like scary killer dinosaurs from a famous movie, but you know, still dinosaurs.
Well, on that note, everybody, again, please check out the A-Side, B-Side podcast. You know, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all the podcast platforms. Y'all are on Facebook, Instagram, mm-hmm. all that. So, yeah, definitely go check them out. Mm-hmm. I'm not steering you wrong. This is a great podcast. It's a great listen. Most of them about an hour or so.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so. Yeah. Right about an hour.
Yes.
Really depends on how much I talk.
I think we've exceeded an hour.
That's usually where the editing comes in.
No, this has been great. I really appreciate y'all being here, and we'll have to do this again real soon.
Thanks,
Kevin. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Movie Battle. If you enjoyed this, please subscribe and review. If you would like to support or leave a voice message, please go to our homepage. You can follow Movie Battle on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you for coming correct.